Hello. Before we get into our episode today, we just want to give a shout out to Team Basement, who are doing some pretty heavy charity work at the moment. They're having a Christmas fundraiser, so they're trying to raise a lot of money for Great Ormond Street Hospital. And so, if you follow @Vintage1983V on Twitter, you should be able to find some of the details. Follow the hashtag Team Basement, and a lot of the fundraising details will be right there. It's for a fantastic cause. It's a great example of Star Trek fans getting together and doing some amazing work. You might also like to consider following the Twitter account @together_fans to see more sci-fi fandoms getting together and doing some fantastic work for the good of the world. And now we can talk about the Inner Light.
Excellent. An ale for me. And for my officers. In fact, ales for everyone.
Turn backwards. Rick and work. And Will.
Sometimes Dimmer.
Oh, yes.
Hello and welcome to Ten Backward, a UK-based podcast all about Star Trek, featuring me, Will Turland, this lady to my right, Gemma Turland.
Hello.
A man opposite me, Rick Palmer.
Bonjour.
And a man to the left of me, Rick Everson.
Hello.
Today we are going to be talking about a Next Generation episode called The Inner Light. And we're doing that because there was a recent announcement that there is going to be a Jean-Luc Picard-based TV series, a new Star Trek TV series. Could be a miniseries. We don't know. I think The only thing that's confirmed about it is that Patrick Stewart's returning, and he's going to be Jean-Luc Picard, and it's going to be set in the year 2399.
Yeah.
At the time of recording, this is the known information about said TV series. And I think it's fair to say we're well excited about that idea.
We are, definitely. We are partying like it's 2399. Although we're not, because we don't know what that's like yet.
No,
we could be all details.
Could be post apocalyptic. But we kind of mused on the idea of maybe doing a sort of Picard episode where we'd kind of pick our favourite Picard episodes and each talk about them, and then we started to think that would end up being a 4-part episode, maybe even a 5-part episode.
We can talk a lot about our favourite stuff.
Yeah, and so we kind of narrowed it down to talking about The Inner Light, which was, I think that was your suggestion, Gemma.
Yeah, I believe so. It was my choice.
Basically, you guys all forced in a light on me. I wanted to talk about Captain's Holiday and his tiny silver speedos, but you guys are having none of it.
They were like, shut up, Rick.
Maybe Captain's you could do Holiday. Your own little podcast.
Yeah. Maybe I will.
The guy's little speedos.
Yeah, maybe I will. Look out for that, patrons. Are we Patreon exclusive?
Well worth the contributing money to.
Yeah, it'll just be me talking about Picard and his silver speedos for about 4 hours.
I think it's safe to say that The Inner Light is a really well regarded episode. It's often it's often included in the sort of top 10 TNG episodes.
It's one of all time. It won a Hugo Award, I believe. The story did anyway.
Yeah,
the story for it. And that was the first time a Star Trek episode had won a Hugo Award since City on the Edge of Forever.
Ah, okay. Am I right in thinking All Good Things also won a Hugo Award?
I'm not sure.
I think it did. But yeah, so The Inner Light is a very kind of standalone story, actually. And it, in some ways that's maybe... there's some criticisms you could level at it to say that they never kind of never sort of fully followed up on what the repercussions of the story would be for that character, I think. But
no.
Well, there's lessons, isn't there?
Yeah.
There is lessons, but they... But in lessons, it feels like it's more that this episode is referenced rather than...
In lessons, it's the first time that Picard's talked to somebody about what happened.
Yeah, yeah.
And the music of the music of The Inner Light is a big part. Well,
it's a very strong continuing theme that goes through that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and yeah, he opens up to, I mean, not, this is a episode about, not about lessons, it's about the Inner Light, but in lessons, he opens up to Nella Darren about what happened to him.
I could do an episode on lessons. I love lessons.
I love lessons.
Ah, shut up about lessons.
We're not
jerks.
Talking about lessons.
But we did lessons.
But I know what you mean. It's definitely an episode that it's not what you would expect from Star Trek, I think.
I guess we're getting ahead of ourselves a little bit, so I guess we should sort of go back to... We should talk about what happens in the Inner Light. And it opens with the Enterprise encounters a probe.
Mm-hmm.
I read that the design of this probe was based on some early designs of the space station DS9. Mm. And that's kind of where they kind of got the design idea from the probe.
Rick Emerson made it. He
made a poo-poo face. He's
poo-pooing that.
Nonsense.
I've not heard that. It wouldn't have been my preferred idea for a space station design.
Well, that's why they didn't use it.
I read it on Memory Alpha. I guess it was like, maybe it was sort of like a preliminary.
Well, they'd have to,
sketch.
Wouldn't they? I mean, I'm sure they'd get a few people to come up with design ideas.
Yeah. But yeah, I think you can kind of see the similarity. It's like there's like a big circly bit in the middle, and a toppy bit and a bottomy bit.
Like a
sticky
and it's like
you move
and it turns around.
It's got an axis, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which the space station would need.
So
they're very snotty about the probe, aren't they?
The probe is composed of parisium and talgonite, a ceramic alloy.
Not a very sophisticated technology.
Once again, they're really sniffy about other people's technology.
It is
low technology.
Yeah.
For them, and they're not impressed.
No, they're not impressed at all. They doesn't. The TNG crew not much impresses them, does
no.
it?
Like that Shania Twain song. But I guess if they...
So you're a probe from 1,000 years ago. That don't impress me much.
It's got the moves, but it doesn't have the touch.
So anyway, this probe shoots a beam into Captain Picard's brainium, and he falls over and goes all floaty.
Mm-hmm.
And he wakes up in a different place. The first thing he says is
computer, freeze program. Computer, end program.
Which I really like. I think that's a great line, because that's the most intelligent thing that Picard could have done. Immediately he thought, well, I'm on the holodeck. I've got unconscious, I've woken up somewhere else, I must be on the holodeck. So he tries to freeze the program. And obviously that doesn't work. I really like that. I really like that touch. It's a great idea. And he's talking to a lady.
His wife. Aline.
Yeah.
Just checking that guy's right.
Pronounced Aline.
Yeah. Played by, is it Margot Rose? I think the actress's name was. I read that she'd...
Margot.
Okay. Okay, I read that she'd auditioned for quite a few parts on TNG, and this was the first part that she got, and she was really happy with it.
She's really good.
Yeah, she is really good. I think. I think all the performances in this episode are really good, actually. And she's acting like his wife. He doesn't know what's going on. It turns out he's in a kind of a. I guess it's like a pre-warp civilization, right?
A planet called Catan. And a village or town called Rezik.
Yeah, and he doesn't know where the hell's going on.
Yeah, because he's
The conceit in that world is that he's been ill.
Yes,
and he's had a fever.
Yeah, his character is Kamen.
Kamen, yeah. He's an ironmonger.
Yeah, he's like the best ironmonger in town. He can monger things that no other
ironmonger can believe. That would impress someone much.
Yeah, I think Shania Twain would have been blown away by his ironmongering skills. Like, that is a lovely horseshoe. hop into bed with me.
Ooh. I think doesn't ironmonger make horseshoes?
That's
a blacksmith. Yeah.
Well,
just
Picard
to pick
can
up
turn
a technical
his,
point.
He
sorry,
could turn
to,
his
to
hand to
something,
any.
Is that not just like, is he just like, does he sell iron?
A fishmonger sells fish, right?
Well, he makes horseshoes on the side, and they're probably the finest horseshoes.
He needs to make horseshoes on the bottom, not on the side.
I think they go on the feet of the horse, not on the bottom.
Otherwise
the horse can't do a poo.
Well, you said on the side. That's not better.
The inner lights are really serious.
That's why we're not allowed back at the stables.
Anyway.
Picard doesn't know what the hell's going on, but it basically seems like he is a person in a
in a world.
In a village. He is an ironmonger. What's the deal? He's married. Yeah, what's going on? I think on the first day he goes for like a really long walk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He looks around a bit.
He looks around at a map painting for ages, which in the remastered version is a high def map painting. Then he walks back and he's like, oh, what the bloody hell's going on?
Can I ask you a bunch of questions that might sound really strange?
Really?
Yeah.
Would you try to answer some questions for me, no matter how strange they may seem to you?
Of course.
Are there any other planets in this star system? Do you visit other systems?
Have you ever heard of a ship called the Enterprise? Why am I not instilling space on the Enterprise? Did you know that I was a captain on the Enterprise? His wife's like, oh, oh not this again.
So he at this point he thinks that he's still like he's still in his time and in the physical world. He thinks
he's been captured or something. He's being
And then I think we come back to the Enterprise. And Worf's like,
Can I shoot it?
We don't know what it's doing, Worf. We can't shoot it yet. Worf's like, his fingers hovering over the phaser, but I just want to shoot it. They're kind of scanning Picard. Picard's kind of passed out on the floor.
So there's a medical team there, isn't there? Scanning him. Is that a weird scanning team? It's like a circular thing which I haven't really seen before.
There's a lot of medical kit that comes out in this episode. Every time you cut back to the Enterprise, there's like another person there with another. There's like loads of wires out on the floor. It looks like one of our podcasting
circuits. Yeah.
So many wires.
Then we cut back and more time has gone by.
Yeah, I think 5 years has gone by, and Picard is still there. And he is kind of starting to integrate into the community a bit, and he's starting to accept the idea that he lives there, although he won't let go of the idea that he was a captain on the Enterprise and he was in the Federation. He's starting to get used to his new life on this planet, basically. And he's like he kind of goes to like a council meeting or something, doesn't he?
Because there's a drought.
You start to get the feeling that there's something drastically wrong on the planet.
Yeah. There's some nice stuff with the relationship with his wife, where he kind of in this segment he kind of starts to realise he's not really been a great husband for the last 5 years, because he's been hanging on to this old idea of his old life, I guess, and he kind of is at this point where he says, there's a bit where he's talking about making a new, he's made like a telescope and he's made a forge or something, and he's like, next thing I could make could be a nursery.
I'd like to ask your permission to build something.
Cayman, You've built your telescope, your laboratory. You don't need my permission for something new.
In this case, I think I do.
What is it?
Nursery.
His wife's like, huh? Do you mean for a baby? And he's like, uh-huh. Yeah, basically he's like, okay.
Because he's been hanging out with his best friend, Bataille.
Bataille, actually.
Bataille's pretty cool. One of the things I like is that the characters that you meet in the village are pretty well...
Although, you don't actually meet that many characters. This is actually... That's one thing you like, but one thing that I think detracts from it, and I understand why, because it's a single episode and you've got to focus on the story and you don't have the time to get into characters, is that he doesn't really meet that many people in the village, and there are people in the background, but he doesn't interact with them, so there isn't kind of a sense of the community. And I know that that's, you know, it's a single episode, they don't have time for that, they can't bring in those characters, obviously.
I don't necessarily agree with that. I mean, yeah. I think they do a pretty good job of kind of having a few characters that he interacts with, and that sort of tells you enough. Who? That he's Bataille's best mate.
They have that baby. They have that baby shower, yeah. Don't they?
Wait a minute. What about that
that christening ceremony?
So, how many of those people? Name the people in that christening
ceremony. Christopher Flippinson, Stephen Piffle,
Petey, Pete, Pete, Pete.
Ah, Jessica.
There's that guy who shakes his hand.
Oh, Ruth.
Betty.
There's the town. There's that guy that comes.
Old Stinky Steve.
Stinky Steve. The town
inspector.
Drunk.
There's the inspector. Who's that guy that comes back to town administrator?
Yeah.
He is a real person. He's not like a.
I like the inspector, because the inspector comes along and he does the thing with the tree. I mean. I love this.
How
episode.
Are you watering this?
How
tree?
Are you watering
yeah,
this
yeah,
tree?
Yeah, they put a tree in there.
Oh, we're all just watering
we,
it
we
with our
water.
We
give up some of our water for the tree because it represents.
And
the...
then he just leaves. He's like, he's not. He doesn't have an entourage.
Well, he says, "Oh, maybe we could do this."
Oh
maybe
yeah,
the old town should have
a good,
tree.
He's a good guy. I'm not, you know, he's. You think he's going to be an antagonist, but he isn't really. He's all right. But I like the way he just like, all right, I'm off then, and he goes. He just walks off.
But I like that though. I like in this episode there isn't really an antagonist.
No.
There isn't a whole lot of drama in that.
No, because that's not
there.
These are lovely people, and then they all died.
It's a kind of an idyllic.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, it's an idyllic life and a sort of taste of a simplistic family life that Picard has maybe secretly always yearned for,
yeah.
And that's
Which
what
brings
he.
Me
when he gets in this episode. And
to one another odd niggle I have, what's the level of technology on this planet? Because they are, you know, they've got basically a good technology, but they've got weird things like electric doors. Why would you put your technology into pressing a button to open a door when
But seemingly not anything else.
Not anything else. I mean, you can't make machines to condense water out of the air because that's too hot. But you can put all your technology into
rocket launching ability.
Yeah.
Well, you can make them, but it's just the government decides that it's the way that the. I guess it's the way that the.
Yeah, you can develop a machine that can dump a lifetime of memories into someone else's brain in 20 minutes.
Which
is
the
alien
only technology that we have in these days.
But it's an alien society,
yeah,
isn't it? They do,
yeah, true.
We shouldn't measure them
no,
by ourselves.
Yeah.
Different
aspects of technology, completely different.
There
ways.
Are they could be technologically advanced in one way and not in another. They might not be.
So they're very advanced in memory dumping into random people's brains.
Yeah.
Crappy on rockets.
I guess we don't know the history of the planet. They could have come across some alien technology that allows them to do that, that they've maybe had for thousands of years, but
sophistication doesn't have to be
themselves.
Sophistication doesn't have to be. There could be a level of sophistication which is something that's not pure technology. It's
Oh yeah.
It might be. I mean, this is an alien world. I mean, their relationship with creating things and invention is completely different.
Yeah. I guess it just really annoys me that they've invented. They have obviously a worldwide technology where they press a button to open a door when that's a completely redundant.
Oh, but I hate
function.
Opening doors.
But
the door button.
Oh,
God, I need to open the
push
door.
Or pull.
Pull the handle. No way. Where's the button?
It's really
am I right? I mean, I guess we're jumping ahead a little bit here, listeners. But okay, the conclusion of the episode is that all of these are memories that have been uploaded into Picard's brain as a memory of this.
Well, is it that? Or is it just that it kind of... Does it have that information and it uses the person and the person creates the...
Because they have the flute.
This is the thing that bugs me about this episode. What happens... Seriously, what... Is he given some dude's memory so that they at some point suck Kamen's memories out, stick it in a machine... And it's dumped in.
But in which case,
why does he believe he's Jean-Luc Picard for 5 years?
They can't.
And Captain Enterprise?
It's not a personality. They haven't dumped a personality in him because he is Jean-Luc. So maybe they've taken the personalities of the people around him and simply put him in, and somehow they've chosen a person who is reasonable and thoughtful. To zap
it's kind of
in
like,
that instance.
So is it an interactive VR program?
I imagine it like a horror novel.
But then
he's got
there's the stuff like, oh, I'm going to go show my evidence to the council and stuff. It's like, well, what level of impact can you have? Then they react and it's kind of like, how elaborate does this go? And it just doesn't make sense. Because they all talk like it's an actual person's memories, but it can't be an actual person's memories unless that person was delusional, believing he was a starship captain, and then they just managed to find, by coincidence, someone who matched the delusion to fit the memories. Or it's an interactive VR program, and then potentially none of that was real.
Unless they were able to beam his consciousness back into someone who was ill and actually was brain dead. That was the whole having a fever thing. I'm just making this up, by the way.
I know this.
And then his consciousness took over that body. So actually, it was real.
You're just recounting Patrick Stewart's storyline from the end of the third X-Men film.
Well, the way I see it is that it's kind of a. So the idea was that this race knew that they were dying and they had no way to escape this planet. Basically, their civilization was going to be wiped out, and they wanted a way for their civilization to be remembered. And
I hope you find me in the future.
Yes, my love.
Lee.
The rest of us have been gone 1,000 years. If you remember what we were and how we lived, then we'll have found life again.
So they may be kind of focused in on the guy that kind of put together the plan for making this thing a kind of a memory. And I think they kind of made a sort of an interactive
of human technology. If this is alien technology, then their very interpretation of memory and could be completely different to ours.
Yeah.
Now the question might be, well, then why would it work on a human?
Mm.
I know what you mean, but I think if this is a piece of alien technology, then their civilization might just have a different way of being able to do this stuff.
I think my take on it is that it's a that the characters are real, the people were all real, that the Picard's wife existed and his kids existed, and they were all sort of characters that were sort of programmed into this kind of memory program.
Mm.
And then the idea is that you kind of put yourself into that world
and
you play a character and they kind of react to you naturally as those characters would do, but that the situation couldn't play out exactly.
They react to what you do, which
well,
is
maybe
a lot
they
the
weren't,
real
people. Maybe they weren't actually real people who existed. They were just analogues of the type of people who existed in that society.
Well, maybe, yeah. I mean, there's nothing to say either way.
Yeah.
But yeah, they could be. It could be that they were a sort of amalgamation of characters.
The more
in
you
that
get,
world,
you
yeah.
more, the more you get to that though, and I agree. I think I kind of the more I think about it, the more I think they are just sort of representations rather than actually they're not recreations in any way of real people. They're just representations or analogues of, you know, the types there. But then the more you take away from the emotional impact of the episode for me, because actually that's not Eileen, it's not Maribor, it's just a sort of a guess at what someone like that might have been a bit like.
Yeah.
And then it's just sort of like...
Yeah, but
his relationship with
the tragedy is that entire society, those people, that world.
Yeah,
I think the point of the episode is, like Rick said, it's the... It's
him,
Picard's relationship.
Yeah.
It's kind of what it does to the character of Picard, because Picard kind of lives out this life that I think he kind of always dreamed of living. He has a kind of a simple life. He has a family, he has kids and he has grandkids, and it's something he could never really have as a starship captain. And suddenly, he's in this situation where he literally gets to live out an entire alternate life where he does have all the things that he knows he has to give up to be a Starfleet captain. And it's
set at a point in time where it's all going to get destroyed.
Mm.
Yeah.
But then it's just a bit like, so then actually how far removed is it from his like Nexus vision in Generations?
That's an interesting point. I think the Nexus vision in Generations really kind of ties into the inner light in a way, but not in a really weird thing where he sort of has like creepy Victorian children.
Well, why, it's a Christmas. Yeah, it's a Christmassy version of the.
Yeah.
Yeah, Generations is just the inner light, the Christmas special.
Yeah.
My question is, how does it know who to zap?
Because
what if it zapped, say?
Data,
or
it's
Harry
a big ship.
Mudd, or
I mean,
something
yeah,
like that.
Yeah,
yeah.
What if Harry Mudd had been
on
there, and it was like Harry Mudd would just be going around
trying to con all the people
screw
from Catan.
Yeah. Screw
sell them.
Over.
Yeah, pimp them out.
Yeah. Yeah, actually,
a very different episode.
Pretty lucky that it tapped into Picard, and but I think
can
the whole
if it had been Worf.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Worf would have been bored to tears in that world.
Well, he'd have killed a bunch of people.
Yeah, he would have killed.
Yeah, that's true.
Probably got it wrong.
But I think the whole point of the episode is that it is Picard, and it is Picard's experience that really kind of tells you a whole big chunk of stuff about that character.
Yeah.
I think.
This is an episode right at the end of season 5, so fans have had time to get to know Picard and the kind of person that he is and the things that he's experienced. So it does work that way. Like this is kind of like, I don't know, it reminds me of like a Frank Capra movie. It's got that sort of emotion to it. It's like it's not like something like It's a Wonderful Life, but it has
a
similarity
to
that,
yeah.
In that it's about a character who gets taken into another world, doesn't he? And in It's a Wonderful Life, he gets taken into a world where he doesn't exist, and he has some kind of.
And I guess this is like
emotional
a sort of
breakthrough about that, and this is maybe like the reverse of that, maybe.
Yeah.
But I think they do It's a Wonderful Life much better in Tapestry. Next season, really,
yeah,
aren't
they? Yeah,
that's
yeah.
true. That's a very good point. But I mean, I think one of the things I really like about this episode is that you get it does kind of get you involved in that other world, like, and you when you find out that it's going to be destroyed eventually, it's it has an impact.
Yeah.
Like it's a moving story. Like it this. and this story that he has, his progression, having children and grandchildren, it's something that you probably wouldn't have expected when TNG was first first had its run and they were doing these episodes. I'm not sure whether fans expected something like this or not, and I mean, I know it was well received, but
I struggled to connect with the Catan story though, because I think it skipped too much. I don't think we focused enough on any particular era or bit of Picard. It's like he wakes up, he's confused, he checks out, and then we're 5 years later and he's kind of coming to accept it, and then suddenly we've got kids. And I just feel like we didn't really spend enough time or anything. I mean, maybe this is just me, I just didn't get the impact in the same way.
Yeah.
I just didn't feel we really invested in any particular period enough to... It's kind of almost like he's confused at what's going on and where am I, where have I ended up here? And it's like, then we've skipped ahead and suddenly he's like, oh, well, you know, I'll just make the best of it. And then it's just like, yeah, I'm an old man who's always lived here.
I don't know, yeah. I get what you're saying, but to me that's one of the strengths of the episode.
You
kind of get you just get these kind of snippets into this character's life, and you kind of see these, like, it's really sort of efficient storytelling that you every kind of line in each sort of little part tells you a little bit of something about what's happened and what's going on. Like,
it
you
does
get
always
a little...
reference back slightly, doesn't it?
Yeah,
like those, you know, things have been happening.
You get a hint of what his relationship is like with his wife, mm-hmm. and what it has been like, and what he's trying to change that going forward. And you get a bit of a hint about what things are going, how things are going with his kids. And you really only get, I mean, I get what you're saying, you get like maybe one or two scenes with each of his kids, and then suddenly it's like the kids are like 15 years older and they're effectively an entirely different character. But
it's dependent on Patrick Stewart's performance, isn't it?
Yeah.
I just feel like he's accepted it far too easily, and that's because we've missed the key moments that have brought Picard around. And we've had, as you say, we've had 5 years of Picard. We know his sort of character, and I just feel that we've got no insight here into why he's sort of come to settle down, because we've skipped it. And I just feel that's a bit of a disservice to the story as a whole. And maybe they should have focused at least more on these early years to give us a better sense of what brought him into this sense of community more. And we sort of, it's fine to say, oh yeah, you can think this or think this, but why are we having to fill the gaps in when we've got a performer of Patrick Stewart's caliber?
I don't know though. I think the one thing that gets someone more used to being in a scenario is being in that scenario. It's just time. The longer you're in somewhere.
Yeah.
But we're talking about a man who could resist the Borg, who was assimilated and still managed to break through enough to give Data that vital command, was worn down by 5 years in a little village.
But maybe...
But
maybe
I don't know that he was worn down. I think he was a different kind of...
They're not the same, are they? Like, it's different. It's different being kind of... being assimilated or resisting assimilation and getting used to...
But he had no frame of reference for why he was suddenly there, what brought him there, or what, you know, at what point did he decide, well, this probably isn't an alien
he was continually being told it was a dream.
Mm.
His life before wasn't real.
Mm.
And when he is every morning he wakes up to the reality and he's being told that what you thought was reality was a dream, and consistently...
Mm.
And after five years of that, I mean, it were like 5 years is a long time. And
but having all the millions of voices of the Borg collective telling you that you are definitely a Borg,
you have to
give up humanity.
Yeah, but he's not being told to give up anything. He's being told that he has to.
He has to put his shoes away.
And he still doesn't do that.
He can
refuse to put his shoes away, but he'd quite easily give up his entire life as Jean-Luc Picard and become like an ironmonger.
But he has to go on long walks and build a telescope, and
he actually wants to do it. It's like a lifetime long break from the job that he's.
If you look at that telescope and then you go on Wikipedia, you can find that's a very common design, Earth design of telescope.
So you don't say, oh, well, I bet it's Picard memory brought that up. Well, how does that fucking work if he's came in from Catan?
Maybe
he made a bloody thing with his memories. I'm confused and baffled by what this actually is. I don't...
At no point is the episode telling you that he has the memories of Kanan from Catan. He is Jean-Luc Picard put into that place. There's no suggestion that his character is different. He has the memories of another person.
It's a bit like Quantum Leap.
Yeah, it is. Exactly like Quantum Leap.
No,
he is himself with his memories, but he is being told that he's someone else, and he has a pleasant existence, and he has a lovely wife, and he's got jobs to do, and he's got to get up every morning and have breakfast, and he has to do this and do that and do, you know, he has to live a normal life.
But in
so it's not, it's not, it's, there's nothing massively jarring. It's not, he's not suddenly part of the Borg collective. It's nothing as unpleasant as that. He has to get on with his normal life.
He does take time. I mean, it does take him 5 years of long walks,
I mean,
and ignoring his wife
I think is like Sam Beckett leaps into someone who's actually there because it is a form of time travel.
Mm.
And so actual people of that actual time are interacting and responding to his actions.
Yeah. But
is that all happening? Is the probe sent his consciousness back in time to another person, or is it just making an elaborate VR thing? And that's what bugs me.
The probes, the probes of them are good
real,
to allow the
and
stories.
I don't care about their impact on him because they're not real.
Yes, but they are imprinted from real people. So they are representing people who existed, or the type of people who existed, or the fact that a whole society like this, who lived in towns like this, who had children like this, who planted trees. You know, that tree is probably an artifact that someone did do this tree.
And
you know, things like that.
To Picard, it is.
Yeah.
It is real. It was a real, regardless of kind of what the, well, the logistics of what actually happened was, what Picard experienced was a real life,
yeah,
wasn't it?
And I think
it?
That brings me into the thing that annoys me even more than anything else.
Oh, no.
About this episode, is to Picard, that was real. For all those years he had that full life and those people he loved. But the next fucking week, he's piddling about with Data's head buried under San Francisco. Completely forgotten about it. We see no more reference. He doesn't need counselling. He doesn't have any follow-up. The nearest we get, as we said, is Lessons, which to me is by far a superior episode in terms of the emotional impact on Captain Picard and the way we see that. There's nothing else happens. And that really, and I know that's an aspect of TV, the way it's made at the time. But it's just like, this is huge, and it, no one ever talks about it ever again.
That's interesting then, because I read on Memory Alpha that Ron Moore had a he said an unfortunate kind of side effect of this episode was that there was no sort of planned follow up at the time, and it wasn't what they intended. They kind of intended to tell a really interesting kind of standalone story of sci-fi, but actually the reality would be, how seriously would that affect a person? And they couldn't follow it up directly.
You see, when he wakes up, he's like confused, he's looking around, he has to research his memory to remember Dr. Crusher's name. He reaches up to press that for that door thing that's obviously not there, and then later in his quarters, when Riker brings him the box and he gets the flute out, he clutches that flute, and you can see in his face, and this is Stewart's amazing acting,
it's a great scene, it's raw
and emotional. And that's it, never heard of again.
Full stop.
Never think of it, never ask us about it again.
That's more of the fault of, if there is fault, that's not the fault of the episode.
No.
Yeah, it's the fault of how TV worked at that
time. It is the
time.
Fault of the episode, because the episode had an ounce of fucking self-respect would have been made in an age where you could have followed up. So, it got itself made too early. The twat.
But it could have been, I was going to say, it could have been different if it had been made on, if it had been a DS9 episode. But in DS9 we get that episode, which riffs on very much the same idea, where O'Brien is in virtual prison for 20 years. Mm. Is it called Hard Time? And that isn't really followed up on either properly, is it?
At that
point, O'Brien is kind of driven to, he's kind of pretty
suicidal.
Yeah, one of the darkest moments in DS9, I think. And then we also see there's a riff on a similar idea in Voyager with the...
Where
a similar kind of thing happens. A probe implants memories into people's brains, and they think they've experienced
it's a bit shorter term. They just sort of black out for a bit and think that they're in a war.
Yeah,
but it kind of raises me. Okay, those dudes from Catan. Well, shit, he did not ask to have a bunch of memories dumped in his brain like that. What is that? That is not fucking on. You just can't dump a lifetime of memories and traumatise a guy like that and just hope that it's episodic TV in the early 90s so it'll never follow up on. Because that's what they did.
But I guess they were in a position where their whole civilization was going to be wiped out.
They could have just written some shit down and sent a book up in that probe.
They could have found a book.
It would have been a lot easier than the fucking elaborate VR.
You're judging an alien civilization by human standards.
You are, Rick. That's your first mistake.
I want to see the episode where Picard receives a book in a probe and we see 45 minutes of Picard reading aloud in his quarters about a civilization. Andrew's relaxation lab.
There's Patrick Stewart. He actually would have been really good.
It would have been Ashley. That would have been a great episode.
It's weird that when they try to interrupt the transmission, Picard almost dies. It isn't just like... It's not like a buffering. Which you should have got.
There's a great bit in the episode where Crusher's on the bridge and she says, well... They want to interrupt the beam that's kind of transmitted from the probe, and Crusher is like, well, we don't know what that's going to do. And Riker immediately says, yeah, let's just do it.
I simply don't know the risk of shutting down the beam.
I'm not willing to let this thing keep drilling into him.
If somebody gets stabbed, you don't necessarily pull the knife out right away. It might do more harm than leaving it there.
The captain is under attack. We must act. I'm inclined to agree.
Wait a minute, but isn't Crusher the doctor? Didn't she just say, oh, okay, they're doing it. Picard's dying.
You know, when someone gets stabbed, you don't take the knife out.
When you take a knife out, you know what will happen if you're a doctor. Yeah, she said she did not know what would happen, so Riker's thinking, well, there's only one way to find out.
Meanwhile, Worf is like, pew, 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 pew. It's like, Worf, cut it out, stop firing on it. sorry, Captain.
I'm coming off really harsh on this episode. It is a good episode. I think it is a really good idea, and there's a lot of good. It kind of just falls a bit short of the mark for me, just a bit, you know. And I think it gets a lot of love, and I maybe think maybe it's slightly overrated.
See, we're in a weird position now because I don't think we've ever had a podcast where Rick Everson has been the naysayer.
I didn't think he ever had a bad thing to say about it.
And he's poo-pooed on the greatest ever episode of TNG outside of yesterday's Enterprise.
What the fudge is going on?
I think I love this episode. I think it's great, but I would say that it's not a usual Star Trek episode. It strongly depends on the performance of Patrick Stewart, and it depends a little bit on knowing the Picard character and him and what it means to him to have this other life. And so I would say that it's probably not a Star Trek episode that you would love for the reasons you might love a Star Trek episode. It does something different, but I think it does that slightly different thing really well, I do think it's a good episode.
I just think it works so well on a like an emotional level. I think it's one of the most emotional episodes of Star Trek that has ever been made, and I think key to it is definitely Patrick Stewart's performance. He kind of nails in, and by the end it just breaks me when you get that final scene with the flute,
yeah.
And Picard's kind of clutching onto it like it's a lifeline to a life that he could have led, and it's all taken away from him. Yeah, but it's all just a memory.
It was absolutely real to him, and that's the last. But that's the only thing that he's got of it. I mean, heartbreaking.
Definitely. Interestingly, I discovered in my research that the episode's writer wrote a proposed sequel episode. It was adapted into comic form, which is available online if you care to look. I read said comic, and interestingly, it gave me some of the closure that I need regarding the form of the memory dump. And it is essentially an elaborate VR machine. And they encounter a manned ship with people from Catan in cryostasis. And no one thinks, oh, remember Khan's ship, the Botany Bay? No, they all just go in. And they find Kamen's wife, Aline, as one of the crew, young again. And it turns out that she also has been using the VR machine, and they can have shared experiences. And so she has a different husband, and which upsets Picard, and ultimately the Catan people die because of elongated cryostasis. And Picard kind of then ends up with the VR machine and uses it at night to pretend he's getting into bed with Aline, and it's a little bit of a weird ending. And it wasn't massively... It defines one way or the other the nature of the memory dump. But also a little bit creepy, and I still find that inconsistent with Picard's character.
Imagine if LaForge got hold of that.
Sounds right up this street.
Yeah. One thing I did think is that there's a bit in where they're trying to track where the probe came from, and they name the planet.
Yes, that struck me as well.
If they know the name of the planet Catan, then who knew that name?
Yeah, where did that name come from? Yeah.
Maybe
because
the
that's what they called themselves.
Maybe they'd already maybe
they
found the probe with the book.
Maybe they put the probe with the book up first, and that their probe scanned the book. Yeah.
I mean, in terms of like really emotional, impactful episodes, I think a lot of people draw comparisons between In the Light and the DS9 episode The Visitor, where Sisko's lost in an accident and Jake ages trying to find it. To me, The Visitor is a far superior episode of the two. But, you know, I understand I'm massively outvoted
That's
by the world.
You hate the Inner Light.
It was pretty good, but it's just not. I do think it's not as good as it often gets made out to be.
That's just my opinion,
you know.
I really, really like The Visitor. I think that's it. That is a great DS9 episode.
Tony Todd's really great.
If push came to shove, I don't know what I would choose. Which I would choose as superior in ranking.
They're both about loss and about
sort of like I don't know reflecting on a long life.
Mm.
But I think the inner light strikes the same sort of emotional chords as Tapestry maybe for me, and I'm not kind of sure why, because they're two quite different episodes. But
for a start, Tapestry makes sense.
But they're both A, Picard focused, and B, kind of like reflecting on Picard's life. Although in Inner Light, I guess it's a life that Picard didn't really have, but he did experience it. And
maybe a life that in the Inner Light, Picard gets to live a life that he has probably denied himself.
And
that's the thing,
I think that's the key, and that's where all the emotion
and I think that's probably that explains why he adjusts to this little lifestyle. It's because it is something that he probably imagined for himself, and it's alluring. It's an existence that he likes. I mean, like we were saying earlier, he gets to have a wife and a family and a telescope and and a best friend.
Yeah.
He has to leave his shoes kids, out and his
and
wife.
Grandkids. And he gets to have a son that he gets to moan at about wanting to focus on music.
Yeah.
Although he
yeah.
secretly kind of wants him to. Like, I really like that scene. It's a scene, but the actor is his own son, isn't it?
Yeah,
Patrick
yeah.
Stewart's own son. And it's a great scene where.
He gets to. Makes me think of Diagnosis Murder, where Dick Van Dyke starred with his real life son, Barry Van Dyke.
Van Dyke. Yes.
I read Patrick Stewart. Thought back to when he was talking to his own parents about wanting to be an actor, and he kind of channeled his feelings around that, because he had a hard time explaining to his parents that he seriously did want to be an actor, and he kind of imagined the same thing with his fake son in this episode, where his son wants to focus on a music
his fake
career
son played by his real son.
Played by, ironically by his real son.
Yeah.
But I think that's another thing that's great about this episode. There's so, like, every scene is great. Like, you've got that kind of great scene with Patrick Stewart and his real life son. Then there's the scene where his wife dies, which is incredibly heartbreaking. There's kind of other scenes with his wife that are really great. Everything about
his
is great.
His daughter as well, like,
yeah.
All that stuff. Yeah, I agree. I think this is an episode where the strength of it is Patrick Stewart's performance and what that means to the character in that other world and how it affects him.
Yeah.
It's not an episode. It's not an episode style that we would normally see in Star Trek. So it's a bit unusual in that regard. But otherwise, I think it stands up pretty well.
It's hard to. I'm just thinking about other characters who could have been hit by that process. Like, it's hard to picture, say, Kirk in a similar kind of playing out a similar scenario, or maybe no. It's hard to picture Sisko doing that. I think Sisko would be always kind of thinking, I can't leave my son and my real
yeah.
family.
Yeah.
I can't get into this other family and I don't know, what would Janeway do in that scenario? Janeway
would tear that planet apart for a
yeah,
cup of fucking coffee.
Yes, she would.
Yeah, that's a good point.
She'd break every rule in the book. And Jonathan Archer would just be too concerned about where his beagle was.
yeah.
See,
yeah, there aren't many pets in Resic.
No.
Can you imagine if it had been Sisko and that guy comes in, he's saying this the evidence that you know this planet's doomed. What we have to preserve the society. And the other guy, oh yeah, we worked that ages ago. We're not going to do anything about it though. And Sisko would have gone nuts at
yeah.
him.
You betrayed your uniform.
You betrayed your district. good times.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Does anyone else have anything else to say about The Inner Light? Rick, have you got anything positive to say about this classic episode?
No, I mean, I
or do
say
you just hate it?
No, I never said I hated it. I said it's a good episode. I love the idea. It's a really nice idea. I don't feel it was maybe executed very well, and I have issues around not just the clarity of actually what's going on in some cases. I accept it. You know, I'm probably in a minority, but. I just feel like it's a massive missed opportunity for some really good deep Picard stories following on from this that never happened, apart from Lessons, which I flipping love, and so I'm glad Lessons happened. But as we did point out, Lessons could have happened without this. I think this adds an dimension to Lessons, but I just think there could have been so much more from it. I'm a bit disappointed that there wasn't.
Wow. No, I get where you're coming from, and you know, to be honest, I don't have a great kind of comeback on a lot of your nitpicks and questions around the logistics of what the Inner Life is all about, other than
inner
to
light.
Say it for, inner light. Sorry, Inner Light. Other
oh,
than
sorry, quick note: the comic sequel thing was called The Outer Light.
I like what they did there. but yeah, I just love the Inner Light. I just love it. Just works emotionally, and I think it's a great kind of sci-fi story, and it's kind of thought-provoking, but I think it's one of those sci-fi stories where it's not, it's less thought-provoking, more kind of emotional evoking. I think it's that's how it works, and I just think it's really good. I like it. Gemma's eating a sandwich. We'll come back to Gemma in a moment. I think that. Yeah. Well, what do you think, Rick? Have you got any other thoughts?
Not on top of what I've already said, but just that. I think this is rightly seen as a classic episode of Star Trek. But to repeat myself, it's very much about Patrick Stewart's performance in that aspect of the episode, I would say.
But we could have been talking about Patrick Stewart's performance in Silver Speedos.
Oh, jeez. Yeah, we could have. Well, when, we probably will.
When's your birthday?
November.
Right. Ooh. Well, we know what we can do for your birthday.
Oh, God. Well, we're not all going to dress in silver speedos, are we? I can shave my head, but I don't look a lot like Patrick Stewart. Although, maybe
you do
have
the legs.
You're right, downstairs I do. Yeah, you're right. I think I could do it.
Oh,
could
yeah.
do it for Rick.
You have a Patrick Stewart-esque penis?
Don't make me confirm or deny it. Let's leave that as a mystery for our listeners. I don't know what a Patrick Stewart-esque penis would look like.
I guess like a normal penis.
I'm just assuming like
a more Shakespearean.
Yeah, regal. Just classier, I guess. Oh, that is so not my penis. like a tramp's penis.
you know, in Parallels,
Force
visited all the different dimensions, and all the Enterprises appear, and there's one hails them, and it's from the universe where the Borg have taken over, and like there's Riker all hairy and
like that.
Yeah. Basically, that's the tramp penis, you mean.
Oh, well, this took a sudden turn.
I wasn't expecting The Inner Light to take us to these kind of emotional levels. Gemma, do you have anything else to say on The Inner Light?
No.
Fair enough. Okay, bye.
It's been very odd to be in the position where I am the one not so keen on an episode. It's unusual. I don't care for it. And honestly, I can't think of an episode where we would have this again. So.
No, I can't. It's usually you're the most enthusiastic about an episode, and we maybe poo-poo it a little bit. Mm. But yeah, here we are.
Yeah, this is a very bizarre... It's like the mirror universe.
It really is.
Are you going to sleep well tonight, Rick?
Probably.
Is this going to keep you...
No, it's not.
Why?
It's not
well,
going to
no,
bother
you answered
him,
that
it?
Question, didn't you?
It's because of the drinking.
I
think we'll be back in the future with more episodes.
I think we will.
And I think we should leave it there, shouldn't we?
We probably should.
Thank you so much for listening.
Yes,
thank you.
Cheers.
Bye.
See
you.
Bye.
Do you realise how incredible this is? A British tradition! You ever noticed her bum? What?
Oh, no!
Enough of this self-indulgence.
Thank you so much for listening to our podcast. If you want to get in touch with us, our website is www.lowerdecksradio.co.uk. You can reach us on the Twitters at 10backward, 10 being the number and backward being the word backward. We're also on Facebook at www.facebook.com/10backwardpodcast. You can also email us at crew@lowerdecksradio.co.uk. On a personal, individual level, my Twitter is @WiltHerland. Rick Everson's Twitter is @TrekFanRick. And Rick Palmer's Twitter is at Mr. Imhotep.
Hi, thank you again for listening to the podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. If you did, you might consider supporting us. We have now have a Patreon where people can pledge small amounts to fund ongoing projects like keeping our website up to date, new audio equipment as we're going along, and potentially opportunities to expand our content. You can go look at this at patreon.com/lowerdecksradio. If you don't feel you can donate but would still like to support us, we would love it if you could subscribe to us on however you get your podcasts, through iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or we're on various third-party apps. And if you could leave us a review on any of those, that would be fantastic and would be very appreciative.
Thanks again for listening, and please tune in for more podcasts from the Ten Backward crew.
Let's make sure that history never forgets the name.
Ten Backward?
Laddie, don't you think you should rephrase that?
Ten Backward.
Ten Backward.
The rest of us have been gone 1,000 years. If you remember what we were and how we lived, then we'll have found life again.